Wait a minute, wait a turn on the radio. My homie got a new show and it's time to play it though. I hope you got in tune. He talking bigger business. He make a lot of moves. He talking Scott Catoon. I'm saying wait a minute.
Welcome to TechNori Live. I'm Scott Catoon and I'm your host. We're here at WGN, where Chicago's top tech founders and entrepreneurs come to share their story. Sitting directly across me, David Cohn, founder of Regroup Therapy. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Scott.
So we are trying to figure out, you know, the best way to tell these stories with people. We've got all these founders coming in. I actually know some of the people from your company, Gregory Chris, who I met a while ago. And so I'm kind of excited to learn exactly what your company does. And then I want to take a little bit of a stroll down how you, not just how you approach building your business, but how you approach solving this problem for people as a whole. So without, you know, further ado, why don't you kind of give us a rundown of exactly what Regroup Therapy is?
Sure. I think for people to understand what it is we're doing, they have to understand what's going on across the United States when it comes to mental health. If you look across the country, 1 in 5 of us is facing a mental health condition that's serious enough that it would receive a specific diagnosis. And I think we've come a fairly long way in terms of overcoming stigma, these things, where it's becoming a little bit more okay to talk about having a mental health condition like this. But what people tend not to know as well is the fact that over half of the counties in this country don't have any mental health clinicians in them whatsoever. And so when it comes to a functioning market of patients with need actually getting access to those services, it breaks down completely. And that's where we come in. We have built a network of mental health clinicians across the United States. And what we do to make sure that these patients get help in places where they've had access struggles, we put them on local care teams at existing healthcare entities like hospitals, community-based clinics, correctional institutions, even children's homes. And we're basically acting as a virtual staffing agency, putting these clinicians on those local care teams so that when the local care teams are seeing patients who come in with mental health needs, they have the capacity to treat them that they need. Now, just keep in mind, these local entities largely identify these patients, know that they have need, and don't have the capacity to meet it. That's, again, where we come in. Yeah. We provide those clinicians. And the twist on it is that our clinicians are two-dimensional. They are seeing patients via live video as opposed to three-dimensional sitting in front of them.
Yep. So I kind of want to drill into, like I said before, a couple of different things. But the first thing I want to drill into a little bit is I don't think that there's a lack of awareness that we have a serious problem in this country and in this city as well with how we handle mental illness. I don't think it's a secret to anybody that our prison system is basically our de facto, asylums that they used to be in the past. They now just sort of turn them into prisons. And I think it's an important distinction to bring up the importance of it, because I think that when things get really complicated, people just figure like, well, it's unsolvable. We don't have enough money. We don't have the resources. We don't have the people. There's a litany of things that people will bring up as their excuses to not address it. And what I love about technology and startups in general, and what draws me to this, is that we don't come from that line of thinking. We don't think of things in sort of like blocks. We think of them like ways to get past blocks. And so I guess one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about is like, what was the passion? There always seems to be this passion project that people start on and then leads them down the path of creating this company. And for me personally, like I probably misuse and call people crazy way too often. I call myself crazy all the time, but I actually really dislike hearing the term because it's so dismissive. And it I think is a big part of the reason why we just sort of homeless people, oh, they've got to be crazy to be sitting out there. No, I mean, they may have PTSD. They may have a number of different things that they are showing, but what they don't have, it's not that they're crazy. They don't have access to somebody who can help them. And so I like seeing the company that you're building here, because I think it's incredibly needed, and I just don't see people in the space going after it.
Well, if it's helpful, I can share a little of my own story.
Please
because,
do, yeah.
This is something that I feel pretty strongly about. I grew up in the north suburbs. I had every advantage, and yet I still needed access to these services, and I was really lucky in that I got them. And I look back at this group of friends that I hung out with early in high school. I mean, I must have been, 13, 14 years old. My family believed that you should use these services. And these other 10 friends of mine didn't. I mean, that was the big difference, really, between these guys and me. And, you know, if you look back now, in our mid-20s, we lost three of those guys.
Yeah.
Three of those guys passed away.
Wow.
And largely due to drug and alcohol-related stuff. And I think...
That will open your eyes. Yeah.
Well, and I think if you're looking at a place like that where we're supposed to have every advantage and this can happen, imagine how hard it can be for people who are living in these counties that don't have literally any resources.
Yeah.
And the consequences are just devastating. That's from the personal perspective. From the financial perspective, it's also really wasteful not to treat mental health, because if you look at patients with complicated medical conditions, it's three times the cost to treat them when they have a co-occurring mental health condition. The example we like to use is diabetes and depression. If you have both of those, it's three times the cost to treat your diabetes because you have depression.
Sure.
So it's also the responsible thing economically to provide mental health services earlier to these patients. And we have such an issue with runaway cost in the healthcare sector. We really can't afford not to provide these services.
So, you know, the services you speak of with the video, how does video solve or at least even address sort of the mental health care part? Like, where does the video come in? I mean, I get the gist of, like, obviously in any, under any circumstance, it would be better to have spoken and seen someone than seen no one at all. So by having a video, I think it makes a difference. By any means, but what is it about video that you think, is it just cost cutting? Is it enabling fewer people to reach more people? Like, what is it about video that you think lends itself to solving this problem?
Well, there are a lot of components to that, but let me give you a really concrete example. If you take a correctional institution where, to your point, a lot of these inmates have ended up there because they were unable to receive mental health treatment outside, what ends up happening is these correctional institutions are often in less geographically desirable places to live. And further, the environment inside the prisons can be quite tough for a clinician. And so clinicians, if you interview them, will tell you that they absolutely want to help these inmates. But if they can avoid the discomfort of having to move to that geography and then spend the days actually in that environment, a lot of them will prefer it. And in fact, what ends up happening is we have a lot more clinicians of very high quality that are willing to do the work. And that's true all across the country. Any of these counties that have these shortages, principally the issue is that the clinicians who demand high pay and are highly educated often don't want to move outside of the big metropolitan areas.
Yeah.
And so this is the way to distribute that capacity.
So walk me through a little bit more on, like, so I get that, obviously it makes perfect sense. I mean, that's a no-brainer. I mean, you think about it, like, there's only two options there. Essentially, you make it part of the residency part where, like, everyone ends up having to give back and they go work that early, but then you don't have the highest level of experience. You don't have the highest level of skill. It's very, you're basically saying, well, we're going to give you a lesser service, but we could reform and make it to where people had to go to these things as part of, they had to experience these different places as part of their sort of education process. But this makes way more sense. And it's, of course, anything that you can cut out the bureaucratic tape is a win.
So from the workflow perspective, and there's something else I'll add on that point you just made. What's basically happening is the patients are coming in to a point of care as they always would,
yep.
Maybe a primary care physician's clinic. Primary care physician oftentimes knows that that patient needs access to services. And they also know that if they refer the patient out to community health resources in the community, they could wait 6 months.
Yeah.
And 2/3 of those patients will never make it to see that,
yeah,
that mental health clinician, say it's a psychiatrist. Now, if we are actually providing service to that primary care office, you're providing the tool to that to the clinician, the primary care clinician, to say, hey, I've detected this need. I'm going to put you in front of another member of our care team, a psychiatrist, right now. They walk them to a room with the video set up. They click them into the session, and they're able to do a warm clinical handoff right then and there, which, yeah, is clinically far superior than any other way of doing it.
For sure. And not, of course, I have to ask, I try to keep my shows light and funny, and we're not on a light and funny subject, so I have to throw one little zing in there. With this video interface, do I have to wait in the waiting room a long time too, totally unnecessarily? Like I do with every other doctor I see, just wait 45 minutes in this room and then 20 in the next.
Well, so we provide our services to the actual clinical settings.
Yeah.
And the booking of our clinicians to their own patients is completely up to them. And so
they're going to make me wait, is what you're saying. So I'm still going to wait.
It would be great to see healthcare start to treat patients like like the rest of the world treats
wouldn't
consumers.
I mean, yeah, it's so funny, but again, so like, I don't want to go totally off topic. I had to bring a little levity to the situation because we were in a, I don't want to say we're in a dark space.
But I swear we have fun at the office.
No, I know. And I wanted to show that there's more to this, and we're going to step into sort of the business building here a little bit. But the thing I kind of wanted to get to there is this is another example of why I like tech getting into what I call old Buffalo. They walk up on these old buffalo herds that are just doing things the way they're doing, and they have absolutely no incentive to change what they're doing. You bring the ability for obviously a lot of good, but you can start changing the expectation of the user. Right now, every single person who goes to see a doctor, I assume I'm going to sign this stupid clipboard. I'm going to sit down in this chair next to three people who are coughing and sneezing all over me, and I'm going to wait 30 minutes. Then I'm going to go into a changing room where they're going to tell me to drop my pants. I'm going to sit there for 25. Maybe this is just me. You're laughing like, I'm the only guy. I'm the only guy this happens to. But the gist is, you end up making it so that if I deal with an interface like this, my expectation coming back is like, you better get me in and out, because you've got a video interface that kind of cleans that whole process.
It's not only that; it's that the patients were used to waiting 3, 4, 6 months see a specialist, and now they're coming in and they're able to access that specialist immediately. They're in a moment when they're engaged with the healthcare system. And when you think of people going through tough mental health issues, they are not in the best position to try to self-navigate their care.
They're looking for barriers.
Well, you've got to take advantage of that moment when you have the patient engaged with someone who can actually help them. Because, you know, a classic example, people are always saying, well, why don't you just make it available on the phone and let patients access these clinicians directly?
It's not enough. Right. You can just tell, like, in order for this to work properly, there's a ton of trust involved. I need to see you. Like, there's got to be some sort of...
Well, there's that, but the clinical integration and workflow is super important. And the fact that the patient already has a relationship of trust with that physical location they're going for care makes everything work.
Yeah.
And as soon as you take that away, especially for serious mental health cases, it's really tough for the patient to get access otherwise.
Very interesting. So the last thing that I want to go into here is sort of the actual buildup of the model that you have, sort of the B2B model that you've built here. How did you construct and how do you scale a model like this? You start this company, I believe, I'm looking at notes here, 2011. So from 2011 to now, how big have you grown to? I believe you raised like $6 million this summer. So, I mean, you guys are starting to, not that you weren't rolling before, but you're really starting to pick up steam here. How did you get something like this and start scaling? Because while it's a great it's an obvious answer. I think it's a great product. It's a great tool. It's going to make a lot of change. You're dealing with a system that literally is built to keep you out. So how, you know, they're trying to keep their patients out. So you know they're trying to keep you out. How did you construct a business that you could start scaling and getting in all these hospitals and make this work?
We don't have time for a historical analysis of why healthcare is the way that it is.
Yeah.
However, the one takeaway from all of that is that everybody inside healthcare is subject to these dynamics. They're not working very well for a lot of people. And the only way to be able to make an impact, help patients, and help our customers is to do things in the way that they are already set up to do them, which means you can't ask them to absorb change, period. You have to know exactly how they work, and you have to slot in a way where it is easy for them to say yes. And so one example of how we do this is, instead of calling people up in healthcare, which is a conservative industry, and saying, hey, you all have to change the way that you're doing this, we say, wow, you've been looking for clinicians for a long, long time. We see them posted on your website. You're trying to hire. And we actually walk in to those sales opportunities through that pre-existing channel, ready to consume the service. So while maybe they had envisioned the service looking a little bit different, we make sure that we align it to what they've already structured in place to consume it. We can't ask them to change whatsoever, and we can't ask the patients to change either. We have to change around them.
I was going to say, that's the biggest thing, and I also think that's why until now you're starting to see a lot of companies that have just sort of abandoned trying to help it, because they feel like I'm trying to change two incredibly large and difficult things here, and neither one of them is really going to be able to work. So you've got to reverse engineer a solution for this.
Everything.
Like you did.
And sometimes it means doing less.
Yeah.
By the way, sometimes it means refining functionality away instead of adding it.
I guess what's your big takeaway from that then? So if you had, as an entrepreneur, what is the one thing about this experience that you would say, regardless of what business line you're in, is something you need to know?
That the responsibility for making your service consumable is on us. Our customers are not going to change. Our job is to make it easy for them to use what we're building.
Very cool. Great line. David, this has been awesome. Where do people go to learn more about Regroup?
Regrouptherapy.com.
Very simple. Very easy. I like it. You can watch this episode and more at technori.com. You can download the podcast on iTunes. And, of course, stay connected with us by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Technori, or follow me at Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap.